I'm Carol Hills, and you're with The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH in Boston. The announcement late last month took many by surprise, especially the top brass at the Pentagon. First, President Trump tweeted that transgender people would no longer be allowed in the U.S. military. Then several days later, he followed up with this statement.
I think I'm doing a lot of people a favor by coming out and just saying it. As you know, it's been a very complicated issue for the military. It's been a very confusing issue for the military. And I think I'm doing the military a great favor.
For weeks, though, there were few details on what exactly the president is ordering the military to do. Now the White House has reportedly come up with 2.5 pages of guidelines that would give the Pentagon some leeway in implementing Trump's transgender ban. Bryn Tannehill has been thinking a lot about what those guidelines will mean. She's a former U.S. Navy pilot who left the Naval Reserve in 2010 to transition to a woman. She's now advocacy director for SPARTA, an organization for LGBT service members. Bryn, Defense Secretary James Mattis will get to decide a transgender individual's deployability. What does that mean?
So we don't know exactly what that means yet. Does that mean that the Secretary of Defense is going to have to certify that each and every transgender service member is deployable at any given moment? The White House is foisting the burden of deciding what to do onto the Department of Defense with a clear bias in mind. What's more is we have transgender people serving right now in the field, in war zones, on ships. Being transgender in the long run does not affect one's ability to deploy, period.
Do we know how many transgender individuals are serving in the U.S. military?
So there's been a lot of estimates about this. Low-end estimates are 1,600 active duty to somewhere close to 6,600 active duty. High-end estimates of active duty plus Guard, National Guard, and the reserves are about 15,000 to 15,500 by the Williams Institute at UCLA.
If we can switch gears, Bryn, do you mind telling us a bit about your personal story? When did you decide you wanted to join the military, and how did your gender identity come to play in that decision?
I grew up near Luke Air Force Base, and my mom was a teacher near the base. And as a kid, I would go with her to school early in the mornings and watch the F-15s doing training and doing touch and goes. And it was just amazing. And from that moment on, I knew I wanted to be a pilot, nothing else. And I pursued that dream relentlessly through college and high school and then through flight school. And eventually I did. I ended up being a naval aviator. But at the same time, as I figured out what my gender identity was from 13 on or so, I knew that was something I would have to hide. And even as the days of Don't Ask, Don't Tell wound down, transgender people were not going to be affected by the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And that's why, in order to transition, I had to leave the reserves and give up my career. And that's been one of the hardest things I've ever had to do.
You were at the Naval Academy, and you've described a moment when you had to make a decision about whether to sign on for 5 more years. Can you take us back to that moment and what was going through your mind?
It was in late August day, much like one today. And I stood there thinking, I have to commit to another 2 years at the Naval Academy and another 5 years of active duty service. But I know I'm trans, and which one is more important to me? And I chose serving my country and being a naval aviator because being trans is hard and because I had worked so long and so hard to achieve this dream. But it also meant subsuming myself in ways that were not healthy, that eventually when they did start coming out after I was married, after I had kids, after I had a career, it was tearing me apart. It was tearing my family apart, that I was unable to talk to anyone or get help or to work through this or get medical care. Putting our service members who are trans, who will continue to be trans, because long after this policy either comes or goes or happens or doesn't happen, there will be transgender people in the military. We have to make a choice whether we are going to put them in a position where they have to hide themselves.
When you were in uniform, did you spend a lot of time acting, sort of pretending to be someone you weren't?
I remember standing in front of a mirror in a suit and a tie and looking at it and thinking, okay, who am I today? What's my motivations? How do I express myself? How do I present myself as someone I am categorically not? imagine method acting your way through life through a gender that really doesn't fit you, that you have to try and fit yourself into and constantly be on guard not to step outside those boundaries. That takes a toll over time.
What would it take for transgender individuals to feel not just tolerated in the armed forces, but truly accepted?
Most of our service members who have come out, who have started transitioning, have had absolutely fantastic support from their chains of command. We have had Secretary of Defense Mattis push back in Congress against attempts to ban transgender service members. It's not a matter of being accepted. It's not a matter of the DOD not wanting this. The DOD has basically embraced this policy, and now there is an attempt to repeal the current policy for transgender service members for no other reason than politics and discrimination against a marginalized group of people who simply want to do their jobs, serve their countries, take care of their families.
Bryn Tannehill is the advocacy director for SPARTA, an organization for LGBT service members. She's a former U.S. Navy pilot who left the Naval Reserve in 2010 to transition to a woman. Thanks so much, Bryn.
Thank you very much for having me on. It's been a pleasure.